Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center here in El Cajon. Today, we're going to have an update on the fatal police shooting of a passenger in El Cajon. We'll also have the latest news on that massive gas leak in Los Angeles that has forced evacuation of thousands of people and the efforts to contain it. From the presidential campaign trail, we'll have some clips today showing some dramatic differences in how Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders reacted to a Muslim woman in the audience and what it says about their attitudes toward racism. Then on Green Scene, hear about a lawsuit filed by environmental groups locally seeking to halt Covert Canyon, a shooting range approved by the county in the middle of Cleveland National Forest. On the second half of our show today, our very special guest is Congresswoman Susan Davis. She'll be bringing us the latest news from Washington, D.C. on what Congress has been doing and what we can look forward to in the coming year, with some specific updates on her efforts to help students afford college and assist military women, families, and veterans. She'll also be offering us her reactions to the President's State of the Union speech, her views on hate speech targeting religious minorities, and share concerns about regulatory failures that have brought us the poisoned water crisis in Flint, Michigan, and the methane gas leak in Los Angeles. Then on Destination East County, hear about the top festivals and events coming up across our region. Plus, we'll have the latest news on the Chargers' efforts to move to Los Angeles on sports today. We'll also have news about a CHP officer who was hailed as a hero for saving kidnapped children in East County recently, and who now needs help to save his own 2-year-old daughter facing a medical crisis. We'll have all these stories and more, so stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. Under a new rule that took effect January 1st, requiring a federal investigation of all fatal police shootings in the U.S., the FBI will be looking into the fatal shooting of a passenger and a dog by an El Cajon police officer. On Sunday, January 16th, about 1:30 in the morning, an El Cajon officer spotted a stolen car on East Main Street with 4 people inside. Officers tried to stop the vehicle, but the driver fled onto westbound Interstate 8. A pursuit involving police and CHP ensued at speeds up to 90 miles an hour before the suspect vehicle exited West Main and pulled into a cul-de-sac. The driver in the stolen car then made a U-turn. According to Lieutenant Rob Rainswiler, as the officer got out of his vehicle, the suspect vehicle drove toward the officer. The officer, fearing for his life, shot at the suspect vehicle. A preliminary investigation by the El Cajon police indicates the officer fired 4 rounds at the suspect vehicle, which then rammed a police car and came to a stop. A woman in the passenger front seat was struck by gunfire. She was transported to an area hospital, where she was later pronounced dead. A dog believed to be on the driver's lap was also struck by a bullet and died. The driver of the stolen Toyota Yaris has been identified as 34-year-old Jeffrey Sims of Colorado. The car was reportedly stolen in Denver last August. Sims has 2 felony warrants for his arrest in Colorado, including a burglary charge and drugs. He has been booked in county jail on charges of attempted murder, assault with a deadly weapon on a police officer, and felony evading arrest. The passenger who was fatally struck by the officer's rounds has been identified as Kelsey Rose Hauser. She was 26 years old and also from Colorado, where there was a warrant for her arrest for missing court appearances on drug possession charges. Both the deceased woman and the driver were white, as was the officer. 2 passengers in the back seat were taken into custody. They've been identified as Todd Ziegler, 36, of El Cajon, and 20-year-old Brian Allen Blayfield, also of El Cajon. Blayfield was booked into county jail for drug violations, and Ziegler was later released without being charged. The El Cajon Police Department has identified Officer Sampson Pack as the patrol officer who fired the fatal shots. Officer Pack served with the department for nearly 3 years and was honored as a 2014 Officer of the Year by the Auto Theft Advisory Committee for his success at recovering stolen vehicles. As is customary in fatal officer-involved shootings, Pack has been placed on administrative leave pending investigation by the police department, as well as reviews by the county district attorney and the FBI. According to the El Cajon police, leave is provided to give an officer involved in a shooting time to deal with the emotional and psychological impacts. Coincidentally, East County Magazine interviewed Officer Pack last December on KNSJ regarding his participation in Operation Santa, in which officers gave away cash to motorists in need on Christmas Day after an anonymous donor left funds. Officer Pack chose to help out a man with an expired registration and a check engine light on who was taking his children for Christmas dinner at Denny's and couldn't afford repairs. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
A Muslim woman and a Jewish man were forcibly removed from a speech being given by Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump in South Carolina last week. They were staging a peaceful, silent protest over Trump's anti-Muslim rhetoric, both wearing yellow Holocaust Stars of David with the word Muslim printed on it. The woman also wore a hijab headscarf and a shirt that read, "Salam, I come in peace." She stood up after Trump suggested that refugees fleeing Syria are affiliated with ISIS terrorists. Hecklers shouted hateful remarks at the pair, and Trump later backed their ouster. By contrast, Democratic presidential candidate Bernie Sanders, speaking at a rally in Virginia 5 days later, stepped from behind the podium to embrace a Muslim woman student who stated her concerns over Islamophobia and bigotry voiced by some candidates. Sanders stood hand in hand with the woman, then spoke of his father's family who died in concentration camps and gave an impassioned speech vowing to stand against racism in all forms. Trump has made numerous racially charged statements, also targeting immigrants, Muslims, Jews, and others with negative statements. He called Mexican immigrants rapists and has called for deportation of all undocumented immigrants in the U.S. He also has called for a, quote, total and complete shutdown of Muslims entering the United States until our country's representatives can figure out what's going on, unquote. Remez Abdelgader introduced herself at the Sanders rally as an American Muslim student who aspires to change this world and hopes to become a human rights attorney. She asked Senator Sanders his views on the bigotry and racism voiced by some Republican presidential candidates in the media, adding that the hateful rhetoric, quote, makes me sick. Sanders embraced her, led her to the podium to stand beside him, and then spoke.
I will do everything that I can to rid this country of the ugly stain of racism, which has existed for far too many years. And let me tell you something. What racism is about is many, many things. It is pent-up hatred that is lashing out at people in uncontrollable and stupid ways, but it is something very different than that. For many years in this country, you have had politicians, and I'm old enough to know this, who played black off against white. So they told white workers who are earning pennies an hour, they said, hey, you think you're in trouble, but you're better off than the blacks who can't drink at a water fountain or go to your school. And they told straight people, well, you think you got problems, but you're better off than those gay people, right? And they told men against women. We played one group off against another. The rich got richer. Everybody else is fighting with each other. Our job is to build a nation in which we all stand together as one people. And you are right. There is a lot of anger being generated and hatred being generated against Muslims in this country. That's absolutely correct. There is hatred being generated against immigrants in this country. And if we stand for anything, we have got to stand together and end all forms of racism. And I will lead that effort as President of the United States.
Rose Hamid, the woman who stood up at the Trump rally, later told CNN why she staged her silent protest.
So that was really my goal, was to let people see that Muslims are not that scary.
She voiced her hurt and dismay at the reactions of the crowd and Trump. Marty Rosenbluth, the Jewish man thrown out of the Trump rally, wrote on his Facebook page, quote, "We were standing there quietly and they started shouting. It went on for about 15 minutes," unquote. Trump made no effort to silence the crowd or hear the couple's concerns. One member of the crowd falsely shouted that Hamid had a bomb. Others were heard chanting, "Trump, Trump." Trump's reaction seemed to claim that he was the victim.
It's their hatred. It's not our hatred.
He also told security present not to return coats to any protesters who were removed, even though the temperature outside was well below freezing. The Council on American-Islamic Relations, or CARE, demanded that Trump apologize, stating, quote, "The image of a Muslim woman being abused and ejected from a political rally sends a chilling message to American Muslims," end quote. But Trump has since refused to apologize. This has been Ed Barrena with East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice.
This is Miriam Raftery with an update on that massive gas leak in North Los Angeles County that has forced thousands of Southern California residents to relocate. Southern California Gas, which is owned by Sempra Energy here in San Diego, has announced that its relief well drilling to stop the massive Aliso Canyon gas leak is proceeding ahead of schedule, and the company expects to stop the leak by late February, if not sooner. The relief well drilling began December 4th and must reach a depth of 8,500 feet. The gas company now says that once the well is sealed, it will be taken out of service permanently. In addition, the company announced it has abandoned its earlier proposal for a gas capture system to burn off leaking gas because of safety concerns expressed by its engineers. State regulators had also expressed concerns that that plan could potentially result in a fire. Jimmy Cho, the senior vice president of gas operations for Southern California Gas, said its team of experts has been working around the clock. He adds, "Our top priority remains the safety of those working on the site and of the nearby community." A leaking underground gas storage site in the urban area has pumped over 85,000 metric tons of methane into the air since the leak was detected back on October 23rd. That amounts to 1% of the state's greenhouse gas emissions, according to Southern California Gas, though some other experts have estimated the impact on climate change to be even more substantial. According to the Environmental Defense Fund, each day of the leak spews as much climate pollutant into the air as 4.5 million to 9 million cars. Besides methane, there are also other chemicals to be concerned about, including benzene. Last week, Southern California Gas Company admitted that an earlier statement indicating only two benzene spikes had been measured was inaccurate, and that in fact 14 spikes have occurred in the impact area since the leak began. Now, the company has issued a new statement indicating that on Friday, benzene levels were measured consistent with levels for the broader Los Angeles region. Benzene exposure has been linked to blood cancer, among other health problems. The environmental disaster has been called the worst since the Deepwater Horizon oil spill by Los Angeles Mayor Eric Garcetti, who has indicated that there will be, quote, hell to pay, when asked by KNX Radio if criminal charges should be filed against whoever is responsible. Governor Jerry Brown has declared a state of emergency over the leak. That leak has forced evacuations of thousands of families into the Porter Ranch community. Some political leaders have called for broader evacuations, including Northridge, Granada Hills, and Chatsworth, where high methane levels have also been measured, and some residents have complained of health symptoms experienced by themselves and their pets, such as nausea, vomiting, and nosebleeds. Southern California Gas, in its latest media release, indicated it is responding to complaints from those areas on a case-by-case basis. The gas company and its parent, Sempra, owner of Southern California Gas and Electric, or SDG&E, has been targeted by at least 25 lawsuits filed by residents so far, as well as lawsuits by the city and county of Los Angeles seeking damages. The legal actions claim negligence, hazardous activity, nuisance, and trespass, seeking compensation for physical injuries, emotional harm, and reduced property values. Celebrity attorneys have recently met with concerned residents, including environmental lawyer Robert F. Kennedy Jr., son of the late Senator Kennedy, and Aaron Brockovich, whose successful legal fight against Pacific Gas and Electric over polluting a town led to a $333 million settlement and the Oscar-winning movie Aaron Brockovich. Brockovich told area residents at a recent town hall meeting, "If you don't have information, and information that is truthful, you cannot protect what's most valuable and important to you. That is your health and the welfare of your families and your safety." Sempra Energy has retained the San Diego law firm Latham & Watkins to represent it. Yet to be resolved is just who will pay for the damages caused by the leak. Sempra ratepayers have already been asked to absorb the company's uninsured losses for some of the 2007 wildfires, as well as costs of Southern California Edison's errors that led to a radiation leak and shutdown cost of the San Onofre nuclear generating stations in a region that already has among the highest electricity rates in the nation.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Green Scene Report. The Cleveland National Forest Foundation, Coastal Environmental Rights Foundation, and Save Our Forests and Ranchlands announced that they have filed a lawsuit challenging the County of San Diego's approval of Covert Canyon, a firearms training facility for military and law enforcement. The suit seeks an injunction and restraining order to shut down commercial firearms training at the facility, which is located within the boundary of the Cleveland National Forest outside of rural Alpine. The lawsuit claims that the county's approval violates the California Environmental Quality Act and that the planning director abused his discretion in changing the use classification for the commercial firearms shooting facility, also violating the Williamson Act that is supposed to protect agricultural lands. A press release issued by the environmental group states that the Covert Canyon has repeatedly violated county codes regarding illegal grading and unlawful commercial training activities over most of the past decade. It further contends that despite numerous notices of violation and failures to cease illegal activities or obtain proper permits, in October the county ignored its duties and issued an order to allow the previously determined illegal activity to continue and now be deemed legal under an expanded definition of law enforcement activities on rural lands. Granting permission for large caliber firearms training on a daily basis without environmental review ignores such potential environmental impacts as noise, lead pollution of water, destruction of habitat and wetlands, increased fire danger, erosion, and public safety concerns, the suit also contends. Marco Gonzalez, attorney for the environmental groups, says that the county has refused to even discuss the CEQA allegations, disregarding the sanctity of the Cleveland National Forest. He added, "We are frankly in shock at the county's irresponsibility." During a contentious planning board meeting last year, Cleveland National Forest Foundation co-founder Duncan McFetridge accused planners of criminality.
This is not about guns. This is about habitat and land use. And commissioners, we are talking about the Cleveland National Forest and inholding in the forest. And the heart, biologists say, of our forest habitat is wetland meadows. We're not rivered. We're not heavily treed. Wetland meadows interspersed through our forest are the heart of our ecosystem. And this project, this proponent, after years of repeated violations, has finally obliterated the very heart of our forest. A wet meadowland has obliterated it. Commissioners, this use has nothing to do with guns here. It has to do with the rules governing ag preserves and the preservation of open space, wildlife habitat, wetlands. Any wildlife there? Any eagles? Any migratory birds? Any frogs? This is a travesty. To use the law, to break the law, is a criminal act. And ladies and gentlemen, the planning department is on the verge of criminality here, of making planning criminal in this county. Ask yourself this. If a wetland meadow is not safe in a forest, if agriculture is not safe, if quiet, which is a governing category in the Forest Service, quiet, the quiet of wilderness, if that is not safe in a national forest, where is it safe in this county? Where is it? So what the director has done has actually signed the death warrant for a national forest. I am not exaggerating, commissioners. I'm not exaggerating. Imagine for a moment, just think about this. Dones Valley, San Isabel, Cuyamaca, Lucky Five Ranch, just purchased, Big Laguna Lake, Corte Madera, Petrel, and hit, think about this. In the southwest corner, this plateau, Covert Canyon, a precious wetland meadow, obliterated. So I'm not exaggerating. Take the same activity that this planning department is saying is allowed, is beautiful, and extend that to all the other wet meadowlands. Death of a national forest.
Robin Williams, a neighbor of the property who filed an unsuccessful appeal with the County Planning Commission along with her husband Clark, says the door remains open for neighbors to file their own lawsuit in the future. Mark Halcon, owner of Covert Canyon, has in turn claimed the Williams created fire hazards on their property and insists that their accusations against him are false. Besides the Williams, several other neighbors have voiced concerns, primarily over noise complaints, increased fire risk, and the possibility for a stray bullet to reach distant homes. Halcon has long contended that he did not knowingly break the law and that shooting allowed by right on rural properties should include commercial firearms training, an activity that would have required a major use permit and full environmental review before the planning director's recent redefinition of allowable law enforcement land use in rural areas. Halcon had in fact applied for a major use permit and then withdrew it after scaling back earlier plans that also included a training tower, helicopter landing pad, and more. During an East County Magazine visit to his property recently, Halcon claimed that he cleared a blocked spring and used the dirt to build berms around his shooting ranges, learning only later that such grading of wetlands was illegal. Brush cleared on Cleveland National Forest adjacent to his land was on an airstrip built by a prior property owner, he further stated, adding that he has since reseeded the cleared area, although environmentalists contend that restoration was not adequate. Asked for his response to the lawsuit filed by the environmental groups, Halcon told us, "We expected this, but I haven't heard from our attorneys yet that we've been served." He indicated he would contact us back for comment after speaking with his attorneys, but to date he has not done so over a week later.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. Today, we are delighted to welcome our very special guest, Congresswoman Susan Davis. She is a Democrat who represents the 53rd Congressional District, which includes parts of San Diego and much of East County now. In Congress, she has championed measures to support women, military families, education, healthcare, and veterans. She is a former social worker who also served on the San Diego Unified School District Board and in the State Assembly before Congress. She once lived on a kibbutz in Israel and later in Japan, where her husband was stationed in the military. She's also a mother and grandmother. And in Congress, she serves on the Armed Services Committee and the Education and Workforce Committee. Susan, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Miriam. It's always great to be with you.
Well, we're certainly glad you could join us. Let's start with an update on some of the latest news in Washington. Can you give us a couple of highlights or lowlights of what's been happening in Congress that our listeners should be aware of?
Well, everyone knows we just had the State of the Union address, and so that's an important time for our bicameral Congress to come together, along with the judiciary and, of course, the administration to highlight what has been occurring, of course, in the country and looking forward to the year ahead.
Absolutely. What is your response to the State of the Union? Do you have any specific comments on some of the things the president said?
Well, I think the president was asking us to enlist our better angels. He was speaking of a time and letting us know this is not all about this president or past presidents or future presidents, but it really is all about the country as a whole, and that we need to come together. We have problems to solve. And I think he was telling us that I know you can do this and we want to work together. It hasn't always been easy. We know that. But I think he wanted that message to resonate with Americans.
Yeah, he definitely did talk about calling for an end to this sort of bitter bipartisanship, and not just the remainder of his presidency, but he said looking ahead 5 years, 10 years to whoever the next president will be.
This is Janice Russell with East County Magazine, and I also wanted to ask Congresswoman Davis, what are some of your legislative highlights from the last year in Congress?
Well, one of the things we have worked on, and I know we recently had a meeting with our constituents around the issues of debt and loan for our college students. That's something that we are concerned about. We've had some bills that would focus on making sure that when students wanted to pay down their principal, they could do that and not just have it affect their interest, because the more they can do that and paying down their principal when they put in a little bit more, that's a good thing for them, and we want them to be able to do that. We are fortunate that there's been some revision of the FAFSA forms, and that's a good thing, but we want to figure out this problem because we know that the cost of education for our young people today is just too high, and we want to be part of that solution.
Yeah, very good point. What else could be done to make college more affordable?
We've looked at a number of issues, and of course the universities and colleges have tried to also understand their costs. We know if you look at our universities today, there is competition. Young people want more in the way of facilities. They want more in the way of services. And so we know that has an effect. And some of that is a good effect because it does enable them to engage their students more. And I'm certainly one who loves it when people, and our students particularly, are involved in community service. And we need to have facilities to help them do that as well. But we also know that it's gotten out of hand. And we have to find a way to help it be easier for students to get the loans, but more than that, to be able to pay them back in a timely fashion. I also think we need to find ways that when we have students who are engaging in professions that we need in our communities, that we have ways of letting them pay that down by their service to the community. So that would be something else we're looking at.
Sure. And there have been major education reforms implemented recently by Congress and the President. What are your views on those? And do you have additional thoughts on education issues?
Well, we just had the passage of the ESEA, which is the, what people think about as the, you know, child left behind. After 14 years of not being able to quite move forward with new legislation, we finally did pass a new education bill. The difficulty with No Child Left Behind was, I think a lot of people felt it was punitive. It was a little bit of one size fits all. Now, under the new legislation, the state will remain the major, really, focus of education. It always has been. That's the way our constitutions were written. But I think people felt that the federal government, perhaps, was engaged more than it needed to be. We're going to see how this goes because a lot of the focus will now be on the states. We will continue to have students tested. We will continue to have students evaluated as well as the instructional leaders, but the focus for that will be really at the state level and their oversight.
Yeah, because they certainly know the students and their schools the best.
Yeah, as a former school board member, I find this issue to be so critical and so important. What we want to be sure is that every student at every school has a chance to equally have an opportunity.
Yeah,
we can't guarantee what happens, but we want to give them all an equal chance at that opportunity.
Yeah, very good. And that was certainly a rare example in this Congress of bipartisanship where we did see something that everyone felt was important move forward.
You recently introduced a bill that would allow military women who served in World War II to be buried at Arlington National Cemetery. Can you provide details?
Sure. This is really about the WAFs. And the WASP is not the, you know, that bug that flies around. It's the women Air Force special pilots, that were engaged during World War II, early in the war when we knew we needed pilots to ferry material and people, from one place to another. And the individuals, the pilots, the service members who were engaged in this needed to fight the war, and we needed additional help in securing those services. And so they called on women who had been pilots, who were experienced pilots, to play this role. For years, there was an effort to have them seen as equal to those who had served in the military.
Yeah,
and we finally were able to do that. And one of the ways that that was brought about and really a symbol was back in the early 2000s, they were able to be buried at Arlington National Cemetery. Arlington National Cemetery is run by the Army, and they had allowed that to happen. And that was terrific from the WASP point of view. I happened to be in the Congress and was in Washington in our Emancipation Hall when these women were honored with gold medals for their service. So what happened, though, a year ago, is that the Secretary of the Army felt that with the facility crunch, essentially, you know, the capacity limitations that they had at Arlington, that the WASP would no longer be interned there. They never had full body burial rites, but they did have the ability to have their ashes.
So your bill would restore that, right?
And so what we're doing is working hard to restore that. And we think that, we think it was a mistake. And we think that in many, with so few really women, wanting that, there is a woman, particularly her, who died recently, and her family, wants to be sure that that honor goes to her, and we think it should.
Her actual last wishes were she wants to be buried at Arlington, and that was her right before, and this would restore that.
So. Right. And in this particular case, it is almost, her local cemetery. We do allow burials in national cemeteries for WASP today, but they ruled it out at Arlington. And so we want to change this injustice. Yeah. We want to, you know, allow that to happen.
Okay.
Very good. And what else are you working on as a member of the Armed Services Committee that our military listeners and their families should know?
We're always working on issues that help our military families, because we know it's not just the service member who actually prepares and serves and deploys, but their entire family is very involved in that. I have worked very, very hard on some of the really difficult issues that we've seen in the military, over the last number of years, having to do with sexual assault and trauma. We have actually enacted upwards of probably 45 bills over the last few years, probably more than that. Some of them, you know, quite small, fixing a problem. But we've also brought forth counselors, advisors, advocates who assist victims from the time that they even are thinking about putting in a report throughout, even if there's a court martial. That's something that we continue to work hard on and ask the questions and follow those issues, because we think for our entire military, it becomes a readiness issue. It's very important that these issues are taken seriously, and that those who perpetuate and are predators within our military are no longer in the military whatsoever, and that they're treated under judicial rules.
Well, very good. I'm sure all of the women in the military appreciate the fight that you've been putting up to protect them. Speaking of military issues, we're seeing certainly a tremendous rise in violence around the world, but particularly in the Middle East. And we're also seeing a rather alarming rise in anti-Semitism around the world. I mean, situations where it's so bad that Jewish children in France can't even go to school anymore. A lot of Jewish people are fleeing Europe. In Israel, we're seeing these knife attacks, a pregnant mother stabbed to death in front of her children the other day. I don't know how much of this is getting out in the media. It seems like maybe not enough. But I'm wondering how concerned you are about this increasing violence in the Middle East and in Israel in particular, as well as the anti-Semitism and the rhetoric of hate that seems to be on the rise against not only Jewish people, but other religious minorities, Muslims included.
I appreciate your bringing this up, because it's true that whenever we see the kind of instability that we're experiencing right now, that we also see a lot of fear, and sometimes that does come out in hating people that somehow, you know, feel like that are not your people. And I think we see that, and it's extremely disturbing. I think what's very important is that we push back against it. That local officials, as well as state and national officials, not just here, of course, in the United States, but we're talking across the world and around the world where that happens, because where that begins to have an effect on communities, the outcomes, consequences have never been good. Marginalizing any group of people is not proper. And we have to fight back. And I think that's what we're trying to do. I think partly, the United States, one of the things that the president spoke about in the State of the Union is the importance of partnerships. We need to develop those partnerships. And when we exclude people or we rail against people as a country, that doesn't help us in our relationships and calling upon people around the world.
Yeah, thank you very much. Can you comment on the recent efforts by the Republicans to repeal Obamacare? They've been trying to for a long time, but last month they actually got a bill passed by the Senate, which the president vetoed.
Well, I think that was about the 62nd attempt, if I'm not mistaken, to appeal Obamacare. And I think the difficulty we have with this is that people actually, millions of people are insured today that were not before. Even for people who had insurance, but could not access their insurance because they had a pre-existing condition, know that they have a sense of comfort about Obamacare today and that they can access that insurance. Have we dealt with every problem that's come up? Of course not. And anyone who's dealt with the healthcare system often knows this. But one of the problems that they wanted to address in Obamacare was changing the cost curve, you know, was having it move down rather than up.
Right.
And what we have seen is that there is a difference, and costs have gone down, not just in medical care, but also in Medicare itself, for seniors, because we're focusing more on wellness. You know, here we are in an office building that focuses on wellness as well. Mm-hmm. And it's so important that be the focus. And we know we can save money when we do that. But partly it's the way we organize care. The Obamacare has pushed this. It hasn't gotten as far as I think we would have liked it to, perhaps. But we know that it is making a difference in that way. And all I ask is the same question that I think has been asked by not just the president, by others, is what is the alternative? Because those things that people like about Obamacare are actually important to have. And if you start taking those things away, because I've heard my colleagues say, well, we're going to keep this and we're going to keep that. But in the end, we have to have something that works for everyone, that may not be perfect for everyone, that addresses the concerns that people have. And so far, it appears that it's doing that.
Very good. A couple of quick questions on some important issues that have been in the news just in recent weeks here. One of them is the Clean Water Act. There was a bill that the Republicans pushed through that would have rolled back protections under the Clean Water Act and returned responsibility for many waterways that provide drinking water for the public to the states. That didn't work so well, as we saw in Flint, Michigan, where a tragic case there of an entire city that's basically been poisoned with lead poisoning because a governor, to save a few dollars, changed the water source to a polluted river and didn't put the required anti-corrosion chemical in that would have cost just $100 a day. And now you have all the children with lead poisoning who will be impacted for life. Now, you voted against this bill that the president ultimately vetoed that would have rolled back, you know, the Clean Water Act protections, but I would love to hear your comments about this.
Yeah, we have to be smart in the way that we roll back many of our regulations. I think that there are regulations that are duplicative and that we need to look at. Whenever, you know, we always want to do that. We want to be smart about it and use common sense. Mm-hmm. You know, what is important and what sends an important message, how critical it is to do everything within our power to fight pollution, whether it's water pollution or air pollution, because it's the health, it's the safety of people. What's happened in Flint, Michigan is outrageous. It is outrageous. And when you hear that people were trying to bring it to the attention of authorities.
It was covered up. Yeah, they knew about it for months and covered it up.
What do you say to a parent whose child now has high lead levels, which we know impact their ability to grow up and be productive citizens? So all that is important. And I think we just have to be smart about it. And when you see people cutting back because of dollars, yes, we need to use the taxpayers' dollars wisely, but some things are not smart.
Yeah. And now it's the federal government.
We
that's
need
coming
to have
to bail
the
out.
Oversight. Yeah. We need to have the people to come in. We need to have people who have a history of this, who are looking at these issues and know they have examples of where these kinds of things did not benefit the public in the past, and we have to listen to them as well. But mostly we have to listen to the people in those communities, and it breaks my heart, as I know it does all of you out there, all the listeners.
Yeah.
Just imagine that happening here.
And we should add that among San Diego's congressional delegation, Republicans Duncan Hunter and Daryl Issa voted for that bill to weaken the Clean Water Act. erstwhile Democrats Juan Vargas and Scott Peters joined with Susan Davis in opposing it. On a related note, we have this massive methane natural gas leak going on right now in Los Angeles that since October has been spewing out as much methane each day as between 4.5 and 9 million cars would put out. They've had to evacuate several thousand families, and that may become even more with no end in sight. It's not going to be capped until at least February. What do you believe we need to do to address the problem of the aging gas and oil infrastructure in this nation, as well as maybe taking a look at the safety issues? I understand they didn't even have a shutoff valve on that.
Right. And I think that's another example where the public is being hurt because oversight wasn't working or we didn't have enough in place. I suspect you could go back and you could see that the laws were in place may have been honored in some case, but the laws weren't good enough for the situation. And I think when it comes to infrastructure, we know today we have great costs in our infrastructure that are being ignored. Why are they being ignored? Whether it's transportation or bridges, because we haven't decided that this is important enough. Mm-hmm. We have been pushing hard to have a budget that really reflects the needs of this country in infrastructure. There are ways to do that. And unfortunately, we've not been able to get the consensus. And when if we go back to some of what we said earlier about working together, surely all of us can see that every community needs more incentives to get this right. And I think this is a terrible example of what's happening in Los Angeles, an area now where we have to get this fixed. And we have to know, you know, what went wrong, why, and make sure that it doesn't happen again.
Yeah, very, very well said.
Actually, what can the public expect to happen this year in Congress?
Well, I think there are a number of areas that we expect to be working on. Some judicial reform is one. I would love to see us tackle immigration, but I don't think that's going to happen. It is a good sign that we passed a bipartisan budget recently that does a lot for the San Diego community. We talked about education earlier, helping impact aid and military families and children, as well as a host of other areas, including some transportation. But, you know, we need to really take a look at what we can accomplish, and we need to be focused on what are our values and what do we think we can work on to be sure that they're funded in the next number of years, in addition to the budget that just passed. And we need to come together, I think, to solve some of the very complex issues we have. And I'm looking forward to that.
Great. When you say judicial reform, are you referring to criminal justice reforms specifically?
Yes, because I think that there seems to be a bipartisan approach to how we look at this and see whether there are changes that can be made in our systems so that more people are able to be rehabilitated, return to their communities, and be productive citizens.
Okay.
And is there anything else that you would like our listeners to know?
I just hope that they keep listening and providing feedback. And we seek that certainly all the time. We have a wonderful team in my office that works very hard on any number of cases that have to come forward. But we also want people to come in and chat with us. We have a very wide open door, and we hope that people will do that.
Very good. Well, as always, Congresswoman, it has been a pleasure. We have been speaking, listeners, to Congresswoman Susan Davis. I want to thank you very much for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice.
Thank you.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, Networking for Social Justice. You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Rebecca Williamson.
And Leon Thompson, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
This week's Destination East County includes disaster preparedness classes, hawk watching in Alpine, wine tasting with East County wineries from along Highway 94, and Health Awareness Month in Santee.
Plus, we'll have previews of coming attractions, including California Dreamin' in Anza Borrego Desert, the Citizen of the Year luncheon in El Cajon, plus Laurel and Hardy movies and a Porky Pig cartoon. So stay tuned for all of these events and more.
A night of enjoying fine wines, great food, and live jazz is on the horizon in East County. On Saturday, January 23rd, from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m., the community will come together for a fun evening to benefit St. Pius X Catholic Church's Building Fund. The money raised by the event is earmarked for the restoration of the church's building dating back to the 1950s. Guests will enjoy unlimited wine tasting and heavy hors d'oeuvres. The event will feature the following wineries, all of which are located in East County: Dulzura Vineyard and Winery, Granite Lion Cellars, Deerhorn Valley Vineyards, Campo Creek Vineyards, Westfall Winery. The complimentary coffee, tea, water, and soft drinks will be available along with a full no-host bar. It will be held at Tater Hacienda in El Cajon. The event is open to the public, 21 years of age and up. Tickets can be purchased at St. Pius the 10th Hamul, spelled STPIUSXJAMUL.com, or call St. Pius the 10th Hamul at 619-669-0085.
The new CERT program, the CERT, Community Emergency Response Team Disaster Preparedness Academies for 2016, have been posted. This valuable program is designed to help protect yourself, your family, your neighbors, and your neighborhood in an emergency situation or disaster, and to possibly assist emergency agencies during large natural disasters. Three academies are planned for this year: January 23rd, June 11th, and September 10th. Each academy consists of six classes. Note, a few spaces are left for the academy beginning this coming Saturday, January 23rd. Visit heartlandfire.org for the full 2016 CERT Academy schedule, or you can call 619-441-1737 for more information. For information on the El Nino readiness, please visit heartlandfire.org and click on the El Nino tab. There's a special educational video available.
Hawk Watch, a celebration of raptors, will take place at the Wildlife Research Institute in Ramona Grasslands at 10 a.m. each Saturday in January and February, rain or shine. You can observe both wintering and resident raptors such as the golden eagle, bald eagle, ferruginous hawk, red-tailed hawk, prairie falcon, red-shouldered hawk, and burrowing owl. 19 species of raptors have been recorded at this raptor hotspot, where you will learn the life histories of these beautiful birds as well as the importance of the Ramona grassland ecosystem. In addition to the wild raptors, you will also see trained raptors and owls up close. Bring binoculars if you have them, though scopes will be available. Refreshments, coffee, pastries will also be provided. For more information, visit wildlife-research.org.
January is Health Awareness Month in Santee. To help increase health awareness in the city of Santee, California Health Network has partnered with dozens of organizations and companies to offer free and discounted health and fitness classes and services. Whether you're looking for free kickboxing and yoga lessons, tennis, personal trainer, or free checkups of your vision, hearing, spinal alignment, or blood pressure, or discounts on other services ranging from dental care to massages, you can find out this month at californiahealthnetwork.org.
The Mission Trails Regional Park Foundation, MTRP, presents Visions, an exhibition featuring six award-winning artists. Their colorful works celebrating nature will be on display in Mission Trails Regional Park Visitor Center Art Gallery now through January 29th. For directions, visit mtrp.org.
The San Diego Laurel and Hardy Group proudly presents Laurel and Hardy Animal Lovers, featuring classic movies. The first, Wrong Way, the boys mistake a horse, Blue Boy, with the painting of the same name. The Chimp is a trip to the circus with Ringmaster Jimmy bestowing a chimp instead of their paycheck to circus workers Stan and Ollie. Plus, a Porky Pig cartoon, January 30th at Williams Hall at the Trinity Church on Kenwood Drive in Spring Valley. Doors open at 6:30. The show starts at 7 p.m. Donations are suggested. For more information, visit sapsatsea.com.
Mark your calendar for a photographic art show on Thursday, January 28th, 5:30 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. at the Olaf Weghorst Museum. This special event features the art of Gary Anderson and Joe Payson, along with a catered reception. The museum is located in Rhea Avenue in the middle of downtown El Cajon. For more information, please call 619-590-3431.
Join naturalists called Canyoneers from the San Diego Natural History Museum for a free guided walk in Oak Canyon in Mission Trails Regional Park on Sunday, January 24th, starting at 9 a.m. The three-hour walk starts past the Old Mission Dam, a nationally recognized historic landmark, and follows a stream bed rimmed by coast live oaks. The area is rich in both native plants and animals. Canyoneers are citizen scientists and volunteers with the San Diego Natural History Museum. Meet by the kiosk at the end of the Old Mission Dam parking lot. For more information on Mission Trails Regional Park or directions, visit mtrp.org.
The nonprofit Anza Borrego Desert History Association in Borrego Springs announces a special two-day program entitled California Dreamin', The Immigration and Migration History of California, to be held in Borrego Springs on January 29th and 30th. This two-day event will bring together a bestseller author, an anthropologist, a historian, and a genetic anthropologist to tell the full story of the movement over time into what is now known as the Golden State. The program begins at 7:30 p.m. on Friday, January 29th, with an evening with Victor Villaseñor, author of the best-selling book Rain of Gold, as well as 8 other novels and more than 60 short stories. Victor will tell the personal story of his family over several generations as they moved from Mexico into the United States. This program will be conducted at the Borrego Springs Performing Arts Center at Palm Canyon Drive. All seats are available on the first-come, first-served basis. There is no charge for the ABD NHA members. Programs on Saturday, January 30th will be held in the ABD NHA Library on Palm Canyon Drive, and space is limited. The day begins with the Californians, the First Humans by anthropologist Professor Manfred Knack, telling the story of the people who moved into and through California before the Spanish arrived. History professor Mary Jo Moore will then speak about the immigration history of California from the days of the Spanish to the present day. The program concludes with an evening presentation by genetic anthropologist Amy Dnan, who will speak about genetic research and how it has uncovered the story of early human migration. Pre-registration is required for these programs, and space is limited. Additional information about this program is available online at abdnha.org/CaliforniaDreamin'.
Mission Trails Regional Park guide and experienced birder Winona Solak will lead a free educational bird identification class in the park on Saturday, January 30th at 1 p.m. The hour-and-a-half-long class will help increase your enjoyment of nature by teaching you 5 simple techniques to identify birds at a glance. You will also learn how to use a field guide, so bring one along if you have it. Classes meet at the Visitor Center in Classroom A on January 30th and the last Saturday of every month from January through October at 1 p.m. The class is free and open to the public with no reservations required. Details are at mtrp.org.
The Hukumba hikers and walkers will be hitting the trail to a garnet mine on January 30th. Along the 4-mile figure-8 loop, trail hikers will encounter a waterfall, exhilarating views, and other hidden treasures of the high desert area. This hike is rated moderate to hard, and dogs are not allowed. Meet at 8 a.m. at the Hukumba Spa and Resort on Old Highway 80, Hukumba Hot Springs. Breakfast is available at the spa starting at 7 a.m., and lunch is available after the hike. Bring a swimsuit and towel for soaking in mineral hot springs after the hike, courtesy of the spa.
The East County Chamber of Commerce annual Citizen of the Year luncheon will take place on Monday, February 1st from 12 till 2 p.m. at the El Cajon Elks Lodge on East Washington Avenue in El Cajon. Join the chamber as they honor the El Cajon Citizen of the Year, Humbert Cabrera. For reservations, please visit eastcountychamber.org. That's it for this week. You can find details on all these events and more on our calendar and in our festivals and events section online at eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
The East County Magazine Show airs Mondays and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com.
California Highway Patrol officer Jared Mikulski helped save the lives of four kidnapped children in a dramatic rescue on a Santee Freeway overpass in 2014. Now his own two-year-old daughter Kaylee has been diagnosed with leukemia. She is undergoing chemotherapy treatments at Rady Children's Hospital. Officer Mikulski and his wife, a nurse, are asking for the public's help to pay for costs that their insurance doesn't cover, 10 News reports. The family has set up a GoFundMe page where you can donate. Officer Mikulski was hailed as a hero as one of the officers who rescued the four children taken by their father, Daniel Perez, who was accused of murdering the children's mother. A statewide Amber report was issued for the missing youngsters. After Perez was spotted in East County, he led officers on a high-speed chase that ended on the on-ramp from State Route 52 to State Route 125. When his vehicle was forced to stop, Perez jumped out, then ran to the edge of the freeway bridge as if he intended to throw one of the children off, NBC reported at the time. Officer Mikulski and fellow officer Jerry Rutner reportedly subdued the suspect with beanbags, then rushed in to save all the children. Mikulski now asks that the community helps to save his own child, and you can find the link to the family's GoFundMe page at eastcountymagazine.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is DeVario Bell.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
This is Liz Albert with a sports report for East County Magazine here on KNSJ. The LA Times reported on Tuesday that the Chargers filed for the Los Angeles Chargers and the LA Chargers trademarks. These cover every piece of team merchandise, as well as memorabilia, jerseys, and other items. This comes as a shock to Chargers fans after hearing that Chargers owner Dean Spanos called San Diego Mayor Kevin Falconer last week. Also last week, the NFL promised the Chargers $300 million to build a new stadium in San Diego should they want to stay here. In other gut-wrenching news, the Chargers and now Los Angeles Rams met on Monday. Discussions of that meeting were not disclosed. There's also speculation that the Oakland Raiders could become the San Diego Raiders if the Chargers move to Los Angeles. For many local fans, that has a terrible ring to it.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technicians, Leon Thompson and Ed Barena, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.